Bob Gallagher here. Steph, you used the word fusion, and I think on a chain reaction, having been in the nuclear field for about years, where it's fission.
Thank you. You're right.
Thank you.
Got me. I'm not a nuclear physicist.
Hi, this is Julie Wicker, and I'm with True Story Communication, and my question is, Steve, when you were talking about chapters, could you clarify for me which book you're talking about?
Well, in a sense, I was saying there are five chapters of thought that I'd be talking about.
Okay.
But I will be sharing with the participant of the masterclass the material that I've generated so far in the book, so you'll be able to get advanced chapters from the book that'll be published in October next year. So you'll certainly get those advanced chapters, but and handouts and templates that you'll be able to take away from the workshop. So it's going to be a very practical workshop.
And I'll be providing that likewise. I have a book that's coming out by Josie Bass in spring of 2010 called Getting Change Right, and I'll be providing that as well.
Okay, thank you. Hi, this is Carrie Hyman.
Hi, Carrie.
I'm with the American Bankers Association.
Great, welcome.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk more about keeping your focus when fast change comes. And the context for my question is that one of the reasons that we don't have more conversations and get people excited is because in the IT department where I work, the IT managers are afraid that people will get too excited, demand too much that we can't deliver, and it will look bad.
Well, that's one of the things to be studying in some depth in the masterclass is how do you do that? And the key is several steps. One is to work in short iterative periods, not long periods, so that you can adjust at the end of a work cycle as the changes have come in the workplace, from the work itself, from clients who've decided they don't want what you want and they want something else, and the management has seen in the marketplace something else is needed. All of those changes, if they happen on a random basis, then the team is bombarded with changes as they're occurring, and it becomes impossible to get any work done. So setting up the work work cycles, iterative work cycles, where priorities are established clearly at the beginning of the cycle, and then the management is quiet for the rest of the work cycle. And if the work cycle is a month, then at the end of the month, then the team produces what they've been able to produce given the priorities. And then new priorities can be introduced into the picture. But the other crucial piece is that you need to let the team decide how much work they can do. Because the team, and particularly in software, the members of the team are the people who know what's involved in the work and how long things take. And the managers often so removed from it that they don't simply know. So it's a division of responsibilities in which the managers say these are the most important things ordered in a prioritized way, with number one, number two, number three, and then let the team decide how much of that they can do and commit to do that within the work cycle, and to keep track of whether in fact they do that, and then the next cycle go through the same process. And by we'll learn how to measure the velocity of the team, how to measure the speed of the way in which the team is working, so that one can see over time, is the team becoming more productive or less productive or simply stagnating, and so that one can see whether this process of giving the team the authority to say how much work should be undertaken, which in a traditional organization is anathema, whether in fact that's leading to increases in productivity. So it's a different way of arranging things Some things which are now done by the team need to be done by management, and some things done by the management need to be given to the team. And understanding which is key to actually getting this agility for the management to be able to shift priorities in a rapidly changing world, at the same time as giving the open space for the team to actually get on and achieve work without being pressed, as you say, to do much more than they can possibly accomplish.
Thank you.
Someone else?
So this is Michelle Hernandez. I'm with the Broad Center, and I work with a fellowship program that is working to transform urban education by taking business people and placing them in urban school districts to lead change management. In doing that, I was extremely excited to hear about your theories. You were hitting exactly on the essence of what we try to train in the program, which is how to inspire others for a change. And we haven't found a lot of great work on it beyond kind of Cotter and Bridges' early work on it, so this is fantastic to hear. But I have two primary questions for you. First is, do you do customized programs if we wanted to bring you in? And secondly, are residents that are primarily leading the change that has been dictated by the superintendent, for instance, but of course, as you say, have been focused primarily on the tactical aspects of project management rather than the people side. So I'm interested in, once something has already been set out and the senior management is pushing it forward, just your thoughts on how to get back to the people side.
Okay. So, first of all, yes, both Steve and I do customized programs. We do that independently and together. In fact, this program coming up, this masterclass, is an example of that. So we'd be happy to talk with you about that possibility. Secondly, yes, when I think of project management and conversation, I think of it really as kind of a yin and yang thing. You really need both. I'm not saying project management is bad. And if what you've got, in fact, most of the places I go to, is a program that has been initiated through heavy project planning, what you need to do really is just begin to shift the emphasis, to kind of lean away from it for a while, but not to get rid of it altogether, because you're going to need it. You're very much going to need it. It's just that you want to kind of make up for lost time. For me, entering into a conversational mode when you've got a heavy project plan is kind of like putting the fourth wheel on a Jeep. You know, you may feel like you're spinning around in the sand there. Once you get that fourth wheel on, the thing really takes off and you can cover some rough terrain. But you do need that fourth wheel.
Yeah, we're finding almost laughingly that the stakeholder engagement part of it seems to be almost an afterthought at times.
Right. That's common, unfortunately.